According to polls, more and more Americans do accept the science about climate change than ever before. But most people still rank climate change as a low priority. The hosts of WBEZ Chicago's Nerdette podcast talk about science a lot, so they took on this challenge. Talk to Chicago families about climate change and find out why this subject, which many of us know is so important, is still so easy to ignore. For WBEZ's Heat of the Moment series, which explores stories about everyday life on a changing planet, Greta Johnson and Trisha Bobita take it from here.
Kids today may have to deal with the blunt, brutal effects of climate change in their lifetime. But we wondered, is this something families are talking about around the kitchen table? How do parents explain it? How do kids respond?
So Greta and I found 13 families from all over Chicago and convinced them to let us into their homes. Before we arrived, the only thing we told them is we wanted to talk about the future. They were smart, they were engaged, and they were very generous to let us waltz into their living rooms with our microphones and intrude on their weekends.
They really were. Trisha and I talk to scientists a lot on our show, but we are not the experts. So we asked Heidi Cullen to ride shotgun.
Hi, my name is Heidi Cullen. I'm a climate scientist.
Heidi also runs a website called Climate Central, and she has a particular mission: to get people to act on what we know from science.
I often think of this quote by Sherry Rowland, a Nobel Prize winning chemist, and he said, "What's the point of having developed a science well enough to make predictions if in the end, all we do is stand around and wait for them to come true?" And I'm really worried that that's what we're going to do with climate change.
In late August, Heidi Cullen flew out from New Jersey for a 2-day road trip to meet the families.
I'm going to turn left on Damon.
And yes, we get the irony of all this driving.
Let's start with Nissa Holtkamp. She lives a little west of Andersonville with her 8-year-old son named William and her 6-year-old named...
My name is Leslie.
Hi, Rosalie.
Want to try to say something, though? You can't have food while you're talking into the mic, okay?
We gathered around the table. We brought supplies. The kids got paper and crayons, and we asked them if they would draw a picture of the future.
And Heidi brought facts about climate change.
Chicago in the Midwest.
Like, if we do nothing to curb carbon emissions, heat-related deaths are predicted to quadruple in our lifetime. Food will get more expensive, and people living near the coast will have to flee rising sea levels.
So I think what we see is a future of more extreme heat, of more extreme rainfall events, the kind of thing that we saw in Louisiana and in West Virginia. Those kinds of really heavy rainfall events, we're already seeing them happen more often.
As Heidi painted this pretty grim picture for Nissa about the problems climate change could cause by the time her kids were grown up, I noticed William scribbling dark circles next to me. When he was done, he nudged the paper in front of us.
It said, "Everyone disintegrated 200 years later."
At the bottom are 10 little black piles of ash with eyes poking out. I looked over at his mom.
I guess I wasn't prepared for that. Even though he's not really talking about it too much, the first thing that he decided to draw was everybody in ashes. So obviously there's, you know, he's having a very visceral reaction to it.
This wasn't an easy moment for Nissa. She teared up. It reminded her of another conversation with William.
He just looked at me and said, "You know, one day I will die." And I was like, "Yeah, I know, honey, I know." And he kind of looked at me and had this like kind of, you know, like I think he was kind of coming to terms with that and what it is to be mortal and to have, kind of have your children realize that and watch them realize that is tough. And I think I'm kind of having the same sort of situation here, you know.
Nissa said that she was worried that fear could make her son feel hopeless, apathetic even.
I don't want to talk to them so that much about it because I have so much personal anxiety about it. I don't want them to see that.
And there's some social science that backs her up here. Heidi calls it pre-traumatic stress disorder, and it's a common reaction to information about climate change. When people get so afraid of the future,
they just shut down. This is our first takeaway. Getting up close and personal with climate change predictions can be really uncomfortable and difficult because people are scared and we tend to avoid the things we're afraid of.
And not just scared, sad. After almost an hour of talking with another family, the dad said, "Yeah, climate change is important." But would he think and talk about it more after having Heidi at his kitchen table?
Nope.
No, because if he did, he'd walk around depressed all the time.
It's almost like a different way to deny the impact of climate change. It's a camp a lot of us fall into, and I can totally relate to it. Not disbelieving the science, just avoiding it.
We left Nissa's house and drove south towards the Calumet Heights neighborhood near 92nd Street to meet Constance Benson and her two grandsons, Josh, who's 14, and Kevin, who's 15. They'd spent the morning at church, where Constance works and Josh plays the drums. By the time we got to her house, it had turned into a sticky, sweltering August afternoon.
If we turned off the fan, would it be too brutal in here?
I'm okay if you guys are, just because it's probably making a noise.
It's making a lot of...
Constance was in Chicago in 1995 when about 750 people died in a heat wave. Heidi told Constance that by the end of the century, thanks to climate change, a heat wave of that magnitude could happen 3 times a year.
Constance listened to what we had to say, and then she told her grandsons it might be time to bring back an environmental program at their church that had petered out. She also told us about this book she was reading, Jesus and the Disinherited. It's by a theologian named Howard Thurman, and it talks about how hard it is to focus on the long game when you're scrambling in the here and now.
One of the things he talked about, he's talking about that individuals who are at a certain level of society that are dealing with day-to-day existence matters. Will I have enough food? Will I have a place to stay? That for individuals like that, the whole matter of day-to-day existence sometimes takes precedence over thinking about how do even we plan for our lives in the future.
Do you feel like you can relate to that?
I have felt like I can relate to that more lately than in the past.
As a retiree on a fixed income, money is tight, and she's worried about keeping her grandson safe.
One day we were at church and the kids were coming home from school walking down 72nd Street. Someone came along and fired a shot. You know, we went running outside and so on. And a kid had gotten shot in the leg, I believe it was. I think Kevin knew the boy.
I think your point about when people are just trying to get through the day and figure out if they've got, you know, enough food on the table for their family, it unfortunately is as with so many of these big problems we face, you know, in Chicago and all over the world, the people who are in that position are going to be the first to feel climate change in their real life, and they're going to be hit the hardest by it, right?
People who can't necessarily afford to think about it now.
Mm-hmm.
And here is takeaway number two. Most families did think climate change was important, but they're leading busy, hectic lives. And day to day, they just don't have the mental energy for more worry. Violent streets, paying bills, getting through school, the election, with so many other things vying for their attention. Almost everyone said climate change just wasn't a topic they could prioritize.
Social scientists say it's like there's a finite pool of worry, and we can only fit so much stuff into it. This all makes sense, but it also raises a tough question.
Right, like, okay, people like Heidi Cullen have gotten good enough at science to figure out we are wrecking the planet. But if they can't get enough other people to care, then what good does it do to know?
Well, my name's Alicia Viola Zimmerman, and I'm 9.
And you want to introduce yourself to us?
No, thanks.
Since he doesn't want to introduce himself, I'll tell you this is Alex. He and Alicia are the kids of Andy and Amy Zimmerman. They're the sort of family who puts up laminated world maps and posters behind their kitchen table, the kind you'd expect to see in an elementary school classroom. And right off the bat, before we even told them we wanted to talk about climate change, the kids brought it up.
Well, I don't want the Earth to go away. I've become fond of it.
It's a good place.
Yeah.
It's a nice place to live. It's not like we have a lot of other options, right?
Yeah. Until the habitable zone moves to another planet, I'm staying here.
Amy says the first time she realized her kids were thinking about climate change was when Alex was 4. He drew this machine that he said could eat CO2 out of the air to stop global warming.
This is, I think, what's drawn him to wanting to be an inventor is that he is... It's got some ideas about how to fix some of the problems.
You're telling away his trade secrets, though.
I know.
I'll be underneath the table if you need me. That's okay.
There are plenty of big questions about how to handle climate change. Things that seem too hard, too far away, too late to fix, too big for any one of us to take on. The Zimmermans were still struggling with how to think about climate change solutions. So Heidi jumped in with a question for the family.
I guess, you know, on this issue of being realistic versus optimistic, I'm just curious, like, I mean, do you guys actually think we're going to fix it? We're going to make it happen?
Oh, you have to. You have to. I mean, you have to see that as a yes. You have to see that as by the skin of our teeth. You know, I mean, you can't, I don't know. Voldemort can't win. Like, you know, that cannot be the answer.
Okay, for anyone who's not familiar with Voldemort, he's the bad guy in the Harry Potter series. So when Amy says Voldemort can't win, she's saying we can't let climate change destroy the Earth. That can't be how this story ends.
Heidi is quick to agree. And she thinks there's also something we can do right at our kitchen tables. Even if it's complicated, even if it's kind of a bummer, we can keep talking.
How does talking help? Remember the bad guy from Harry Potter? Most people called him He Who Shall Not Be Named.
There's a power to calling the problem you need to conquer by its name. That's what Heidi was eager to tell the families.
I think there's actually so much good stuff happening. You know, there's so many people thinking about how to make, like, the most efficient solar cell and how to store energy that comes from the sun and the wind. So I think there's plenty of reasons to think that we could, you know, nip this in the bud. We just need everyone talking about it.
In other words, Voldemort can't win. So let's keep talking. For WBEZ, I'm Trisha Bobita.
And I'm Greta Johnson.
Thanks to WBEZ Chicago for that story. And for more Heat of the Moment stories about everyday life on a changing planet, go to AlleghenyFront.org.